Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the MSCI Third Quarter 2020 Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session where we will limit participants to one question and one follow-up. We will have further instructions for you at that time. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to Sally Schwartz, Head of Investor Relations and Treasurer. You may begin.
Thank you, Operator. Good day and welcome to the MSCI Third Quarter 2020 Earnings Conference Call. Earlier this morning, we issued a press release announcing our results for the third quarter 2020. This press release, along with an earnings presentation we will reference on this call, as well as a brief quarterly update, are available on our website, MSCI.com, under the Investor Relations tab. Let me remind you that this call contains forward-looking statements. You are cautioned not to place undue reliance on forward-looking statements, which speak only as of the date on which they are made and are governed by the language on the second slide of today's presentation. For a discussion of additional risks and uncertainties, please see the risk factors and forward-looking statements disclaimer in our most recent Form 10-K and in our other SEC filings. During today's call, in addition to results presented on the basis of U.S. GAAP, we also refer to non-GAAP measures, including, but not limited to, organic operating revenue growth rates, adjusted EBITDA expenses, adjusted EPS, and free cash flow. We believe our non-GAAP measures facilitate meaningful period-to-period comparisons and provide insight into our core operating performance. You'll find a reconciliation to the equivalent GAAP measures in the earnings materials and an explanation of why we deem this information to be meaningful, as well as how management uses these measures in the appendix of the earnings presentation. We will also discuss run rate, which estimates at a particular point in time the annualized value of the recurring revenues under our client agreements for the next 12 months, subject to a variety of adjustments and exclusions that we detail in our SEC filings. As a result of those adjustments and exclusions, the actual amount of recurring revenues we will realize over the following 12 months will differ from run rate. We therefore caution you not to place undue reliance on run rate to estimate or forecast recurring revenues. Additionally, we will discuss organic run rate growth figures, which exclude the impact of changes in foreign currency and the impact of any acquisitions or divestitures. On the call today are Henry Fernandez, our Chairman and CEO, Bear Pettit, our President and COO, and Annie Wishman, our CFO and Chief Strategy Officer. Finally, I would like to point out that members of the media may be on the call this morning in a listen-only mode. With that, let me now turn the call over to Henry Fernandez. Henry?
Thank you, Sally. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. My colleagues and I hope you and your families are remaining safe and healthy. During the third quarter, and despite the challenging environment for our clients, MSCI had strong financial performance, including total revenue growth of nearly 8%, run rate growth of 11%, adjusted EBITDA growth of 13%, and adjusted earnings per share growth of 31%. MSCI continues to play a central role helping investors build better portfolios for a better world. We are executing our mission in two key interrelated ways: creating indices that serve as underlying components for client portfolios, and equipping our clients with the essential ingredients for them to build their own optimized portfolios. Indices as underlying components for client portfolios include benchmarks for active managers, replication tools for indexed managers, and underlying indices for listed futures and options, structured products, and OTC derivatives. These indices can cover a very wide spectrum of client portfolio construction needs, from equities to fixed income, from market cap weighted to ESG and climate overlays, and from factor tilts to thematic megatrends. Consequently, indices as underlying components have a vast number of use cases, and therefore our business opportunities in this area are enormous. The essential ingredients to equip our clients to construct their own optimized portfolios include our factor, risk, and performance models, our ESG ratings and screenings, our climate metrics and value at risk models, and tools for thematic and megatrend exposures. Across these two interrelated offerings, we see incredible opportunities that span new product areas, new client segments, and new capabilities. New product areas include fixed income, ESG and climate, and derivatives, to name a few. New client segments include wealth management, corporates for ESG offerings, and insurance companies for fixed income offerings. New capabilities in support of our new product areas and new client segments include the enabling technology and the strategic partnerships that we're looking in a wide variety of different areas and with different entities. In my comments today, I will focus on opportunities in four new product areas, including ESG and climate, fixed income and liquidity, thematic investing, and derivatives. In future calls, I will comment on other areas of a strategic focus for MSCI. I'll start with our ESG and climate franchise. This quarter, it reached a run rate of $192 million, growing nearly 50% year on year. Approximately $15 million of this run rate relates to climate and has grown over 100% year on year. We continue to firmly believe there will be a large-scale reallocation of capital and repricing of financial assets over the next few years. Climate change, the move to a low-carbon economy, diversity and inclusion in the workplace, and other environmental, social, and governance shifts will deeply impact where capital is invested. MSCI is uniquely positioned to deliver the solutions to navigate these massive shifts. Specifically in the ETF marketplace, we continue to see the launch of new ESG and climate equity ETFs linked to MSCI indices. At the end of the third quarter, assets under management in these ETFs have grown an incredible 186% year on year, reaching $71 billion. Our acquisition of Carbon Delta a year ago has also helped us to supercharge our climate capabilities. We now offer climate value at risk for investors across multiple asset classes, including most recently for real estate investors. As you can see, we're aggressively expanding our capabilities in ESG and climate and will continue to build on our established leadership in this space. Our fixed income franchise continued to grow this quarter as our strong position in ESG and climate enabled us to capture more opportunities. AUMs in ETFs that are linked to Bloomberg Barclays MSCI ESG fixed income indices ended the third quarter at nearly $12 billion, more than doubling from a year ago. During the quarter, we launched 22 MSCI proprietary fixed income indices, including 8 ESG and climate change indices. With this launch, we now offer the market a total of 40 MSCI proprietary fixed income indices across ESG, climate, factor and issuance weighted. As you can see, our strategy in fixed income indices is to partner with other index providers, including Bloomberg Barclays, iBox, iTrax, and others, and to launch our own proprietary indices. In fixed income, we have also seen great progress with our liquidity analytics. We and our partner, IHS Markit, are delivering must-have solutions that help investors understand and manage fixed income liquidity risk. This has been critical for investors to meet growing regulatory requirements. MSCI has already been well positioned to support our clients with ESMA liquidity regulations in Europe that went into effect in the third quarter. Looking forward, we're also favorably positioned to help clients with potential liquidity reporting requirements in other jurisdictions around the world. Another product area of strategic focus for us is thematic investing. MSCI has built partnerships with ARK Invest and a number of other experts specializing in thematic investing. These relationships have generated indices focused on disruptive innovation and long-term structural changes or megatrends. We are seeing excellent traction across a range of use cases, from ETF licensing to structured products, which Bear will discuss. Finally, I will comment on derivatives. We continue to drive the strong growth of multi-country, multi-currency MSCI index derivatives. This is a massive opportunity in its own right, but it would also reinforce the strength of our index franchise for both active and indexed investing. We are experiencing great success with these partnerships in listed futures and options with some of the world's most prominent global exchanges. Additionally, we're seeing tremendous opportunity to license our indices to broker-dealers and banks for the creation of OTC derivatives and structured products. These efforts reinforce the virtuous ecosystem of MSCI exchange-traded products. Before I turn the call over to Bear, I am excited to announce we're planning a virtual Investor Day event for February 24th next year. Please hold that morning in New York time open on your calendars. We'll have additional event details for you over the coming weeks. We very much look forward to sharing with you the many significant opportunities MSCI has to serve our clients' needs globally and to grow with the investment industry's strong underlying secular trends that create tremendous shareholder value opportunities for us. We will talk about our expansion plans in products and client segments and the capabilities we need to build out at MSCI to capitalize on this significant potential. To make the event as complete as possible, we will continue our active dialogue with all of you and all of our investors, including through surveys and listening tours. We look forward to hearing your views and how we can continue to optimize the MSCI franchise to achieve even greater shareholder value. Let me now turn the call over to Bear.
Thank you, Henry, and greetings, everyone. I'll start by noting an exciting milestone for our index segment, which reached $1 billion in run rate for the first time. We achieved this through growth in both the new product areas that Henry discussed and more established products like our market cap weighted indexes. Across MSCI, we continue to find many opportunities to produce content once and to find multiple uses for it to address a number of different client needs. I'll give a few examples within some of the product areas that Henry highlighted. Leveraging our broad ESG and climate content has enabled MSCI to contribute to further transparency and standardization in ESG disclosures. In September, we launched a tool to help investors evaluate their portfolio exposures and alignment across the 17 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Our real estate climate VAR service has gained immediate traction with several new sales during this quarter. This combines our real estate data with climate change-related calculations to create new value for real estate investors. An added benefit to the launch of real estate climate VAR is that many of our real estate clients now view MSCI in a new and innovative light. As a second example, this quarter we launched a new suite of MSCI fixed income climate change indexes, which leverage our existing data in ESG and climate and apply them to fixed income benchmarks. These indexes enable institutional credit investors to build more climate resilient portfolios. They also allow investors to implement strategies that consider opportunities and risks associated with the ongoing transition to a lower carbon economy. Another product area we have frequently referenced on these calls is the relicensing of existing MSCI indexes for the creation of listed and OTC derivatives and structured products. As an example, this quarter, we saw new OTC product creation from our broker-dealer clients in the form of total return swaps on our ESG leaders indexes. This activity was soon followed by the establishment of new positions in listed derivatives on MSCI Emerging Markets ESG Leaders Futures. We believe the potential for further growth in the ESG derivative space is very strong. Another great area for derivatives growth is thematics. Earlier this year, I mentioned we were working with a partner on a series of thematic indexes focused on the important areas of innovation in genomics and robotics. During this quarter, we won a license with a European bank for a new OTC swap based on an MSCI thematic index related to the circular economy and renewable energy. This swap is expected to drive structured product issuance in the region and is another good example of the MSCI-linked derivatives opportunity. As of the end of the third quarter, run rate for exchange-traded futures and options contracts linked to MSCI indexes was $49 million, growing over 60% year-on-year. We see significant potential in this space and believe the opportunity could represent hundreds of millions of revenue several years from now. Just as we are leveraging our content for multiple use cases, we are actively pursuing an open architecture strategy to push that content to clients through a variety of distribution channels. Earlier this month, MSCI ESG ratings were introduced on Bloomberg terminals, which are already a major distributor of our index data. Clients now have another ready mechanism to incorporate MSCI's ESG ratings into their portfolio analysis and investment processes. MSCI has adapted quickly and well to the remote working and virtual engagement model. In the third quarter across the company, we drove over 10% subscription run rate growth. This result reflected strong contributions from across our client base, including both established and emerging client segments. MSCI's client-centric approach has provided ongoing benefit not just to sales, but also to the retention of our existing business. MSCI's overall retention rate for the third quarter was 94.5%, improving approximately 100 basis points compared to the second quarter. Analytics retention rate had a notable improvement, increasing 180 basis points sequentially and 20 basis points year over year. Our team's creativity and dedication to solving problems for clients has been critical as global engagement models continue to evolve during the ongoing pandemic. We have previously spoken with you about our senior account manager and key account manager programs to engage with the C-suite level executives at our largest clients. These clients collectively represent 65% of MSCI's total run rate. And the retention rate for those clients was over 96% in the quarter, clearly demonstrating the power of our focused and integrated client approach. I'm encouraged by these milestones and look forward to keeping you updated as we continue to make progress on our key growth areas. Let me now turn the call over to Andy, who will discuss more specifics of the financial aspects of our quarterly performance. Over to you, Andy.
Thank you, Bear, and hello to everyone on the call this morning. As I step into the CFO role, I'm excited to lead our talented finance organization and re-engage with our shareholder and analyst community.
I will be especially focused on further aligning strategy and finance to deliver even greater value to our clients, our employees, and our shareholders. As Henry and Bear have noted, the third quarter was another quarter of strong execution for MSCI. Operating revenues grew nearly 8%, and recurring subscription run rate grew over 10%, reflecting solid performance across the business. Assets under management in equity ETFs linked to MSCI indexes ended the third quarter at $909 billion. This reflects strong cash inflows of nearly $27 billion across all geographic exposures during the quarter. Over 75% of these inflows were allocated to ETFs with international exposures, which is a reversal of the trend we saw in the first half of the year. Approximately $7 billion of the inflows into MSCI-linked funds went into U.S. exposure funds, where we continue to have strong market share capture of flows driven by continued flows into ESG and factor products. In fact, equity ETFs linked to MSCI ESG and climate indexes experienced cash inflows of $11.4 billion during the quarter. Additionally, AUM levels were supported by improvements in equity market levels with $57 billion of appreciation from the end of the second quarter. As an update since the third quarter, as of October 21st, assets under management in equity ETFs linked to MSCI indexes have further improved to approximately $942 billion. I'll now review our asset-based fee revenue results, which were up 4.5% year-on-year, reflecting higher results across the board, including from ETFs, non-ETF products, and futures and options. Sequentially, the nearly $117 billion improvement in quarterly average AUM levels in equity ETFs linked to MSCI indexes aided in driving 15% higher asset-based fees from ETF products versus the second quarter. The average basis point fee on equity ETFs linked to MSCI indexes remained unchanged quarter over quarter at 2.67 basis points. A proportionally higher mix of AUM and international exposure funds provided support to maintain this level. Additionally, asset-based fees from futures and options increased sequentially, with results reflecting improvements in the economics we receive from our exchange partners. I'll now turn to our adjusted earnings per share growth year over year. Underlying business performance drove nearly half of our 52-cent improvement in adjusted EPS. This included both operating revenue growth and relatively flat year-over-year expenses, as the expense controls we put in place earlier in the year, as well as continued benefits from lower travel and entertainment expenses, have largely offset our ongoing investment initiatives. The balance of the adjusted EPS improvement was primarily driven by a lower tax rate and our third quarter and year-to-date repurchases of MSCI shares. The lower tax rate in the quarter was primarily due to a change in estimates as regulations were released relating to 2017 tax reform. Turning to our balance sheet, we continue to have strong confidence in our capital position and liquidity. Client collections have been healthy. As you've seen from our results, investors continue to turn to MSCI for mission-critical tools. This strong liquidity position affords us the flexibility to continue to be highly opportunistic in pursuing our capital allocation strategy, as we've done in the past. During the quarter, we completed nearly $207 million of share repurchases and returned over $65 million in dividends to our shareholders. Since the end of the quarter and through October 23rd, we've repurchased an additional $51 million of our shares. Before we move to Q&A, I will highlight some of the changes to our outlook for full year 2020, which we announced in our earnings release earlier today. We now expect adjusted EBITDA expenses to be lower for full year 2020 in the range of $710 million to $730 million. Our expense outlook reflects lower expenses in areas like travel and entertainment, as well as the impact of the continuation of Triple Crown investments that we are pursuing as the environment stabilizes. Our continued investment in these Triple Crown opportunities could result in an uptick in expenses relative to the last couple quarters. We also expect a lower effective tax rate for 2020 in the range of 11.5% to 13.5%. Our adjusted tax rate should run approximately 1 percentage point higher than our effective tax rate as it has year to date through the third quarter. CapEx will now be in the range of $50 million to $55 million. And for free cash flow, we now expect to be in the range of $650 million to $700 million, primarily reflecting stronger cash collections. Full-year interest expense is still expected to be approximately $158 million. However, as we've pointed out to you before, the ongoing low-rate environment is also likely to drive quarterly interest income earned on cash balances to be at similar levels to this quarter for the foreseeable future. From where we stand today, the sales pipeline remains strong and client engagement remains robust and dynamic. Nonetheless, we remain cautious given that the operating environment remains unpredictable. With just a couple days to go before the U.S. elections, as well as the backdrop of the ongoing pandemic, the range of outcomes in global markets and operating environment remains broad. In any case, we continue to believe our durable, all-weather, subscription-based business model will hold up well, as it has to date. We therefore remain focused on continuing to support our clients, innovate, and ultimately drive forward MSCI's growth algorithms, creating compounding value for all of you. And with that, operator, please open the line for questions. Thanks.
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question, you'll need to press star 1 on your telephone. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. Please stand by. We compile the Q&A roster. Our first question comes from Manav Patnaik with Barclays. You may proceed with your question.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. I just wanted to ask how you guys were thinking or how we should think about, you know, this new wave of, consolidation that's starting to happen also, or, you know, at least we talked about a lot in the press with the large asset managers who are your big clients. And I was just hoping, you know, you could help us understand how we should, you know, think through some of these as they get announced.
Yeah, Manav, hi. Good morning. It's Bear here. So look, I think that, you know, our experience in this is, somewhat mixed and certainly not as negative as it might look on the cover. So first of all, the consolidation has not been that large this far. Insofar as we have seen some cancellations, notably an index related to it, as a general rule, over time, when firms consolidate, we sometimes have initially a little bit of a negative hit, but then typically we're able to grow the combined company, larger company, you know, in very healthy ways. So, you know, as of today, we're not seeing, you know, a significant impact. And as a general rule, historically, you know, the outcomes have been pretty positive over time.
Okay, that's helpful. And if I could just ask, you know, around the investments, back in March, April, when you guys obviously cut some in response to the COVID pandemic, you know, how are those investments doing today? Are they coming back? Are they still on hold, I guess, you know, potentially in anticipation of further lockdowns? Just curious how you're thinking about, you know, the comfort levels and going through with some of these investments.
So the first thing that it's important to note, Manav, is that the set of opportunities that we have to solve for client problems is very significant, and it has actually increased very largely since the start of the pandemic. Obviously, you know, we can point to ESG as an example, but also in fixed income, as well in thematic investing. Obviously, the pandemic and the economic dislocations have created significant changes in the way industries are structured and the business models and the like. So those shifts can get reflected in some of these mega trends, and the emphasis that we're putting on that thematic mega trend investing in order to create indices and structured products and things like that. So the number of opportunities has increased. Now, you know, at the start of the pandemic, like everyone else, we reined in a bit, you know, the pace of investments that we had. A few months later, say 2-3 months later, we felt very comfortable with where we stood in the financials of the company and the outlook. We were seeing this increased demand for our products and services, and therefore we stepped up on the renewal or the rebasing of that investment program. Some of that increased hiring and increased investment is reflected in the EBITDA expenses in the third quarter, obviously offset by decline of expenses in marketing and travel and entertainment and a lot of things, you know, due to the lockdown. But you know, we did see a pickup on that. We will likely see an increase picked up on that in the fourth quarter and in 2021, because we feel that this significant opportunities that the operating environment is presenting to us need to be capitalized with a lot of new products, a number of new client segments, and a lot of new capabilities in the company. So yes, you know, the investment plan continues. It's a few percentages point below where we wanted it to be at this point, but we're stepping up, you know, significantly on increasing it.
Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alex Kramm with UBS. You may proceed with your question.
Yes. Hey, hello, everyone. Just quickly on the retention rate, nice pickup quarter over quarter, as I think you had hoped for. But still, I think on a year-over-year basis, I think cancels are still a little bit elevated. So just would be interested to hear some comments. Is this pandemic-related? You made obviously some comments around asset management, M&A. I think it's a little too soon for that. But anything else that gives us confidence that cancels will continue to trickle lower from here?
Yeah, hi, Alex. Bear here. So I think the simplest way to answer your question is we're sort of continue the guidance from last quarter, i.e., we are doing everything we can to service our clients. We are in an environment that is still a bit choppy and noisy in various client segments. There can be some consolidation, as Manav mentioned. There can be some certain client-specific events. So directionally, we're clearly pleased with what happened this quarter. We're going to keep trying to do the best we can to keep the retention rate as strong as possible. But we are in circumstances where, you know, the market and what's happening to our clients may put a little pressure. So hopefully in the balance of all that, we'll get some good outcomes. And, you know, that's what we'll be working towards.
All right. Fair enough. And then, second one, also quick one here on the asset-based fees. The ETF number is pretty self-explanatory, but can you talk a little bit more about the other two components on the, I guess, index mutual fund side? Surprised to see that tick up quarter over quarter. I think that's usually on a delayed charging, and I think 2Q was obviously a bad quarter, so surprised to see that tick up quarter over quarter. And then on the futures and options, wondering how much there were any sort of one-time fees related maybe to the Hong Kong Exchange coming online, anything that may not be recurring, because that was an outsized quarter again here on futures and options.
Hey, Alex, it's Andy. Good morning. Maybe to start with the second question first on the futures and options run rate. As we noted in our remarks, we are benefiting slightly from improved economics from our exchange partner.